Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Jason, I think we know who WWE thinks the number one challenger in the eyes of fans is going to be going into the Royal Rumble, or at least they're steering fans that way. Randy Orton hitting a couple RKOs out of nowhere, getting the better of Solo Sikoa and Roman Reigns, and kind of standing tall, the first to sit up at least. This is Music Blade at the end of the show. Finally, the contract is signed. The three challengers signed early in the show. Roman waited till the end. We can get into details on that. I thought it was paint-by-numbers stuff, but in a good way, just logical. Put the wrestlers out there who are all involved in that match and put the focus on the world title. And I don't think we had any gross exaggerations of how Reigns is assured to lose because there's three challengers this week. But certainly Heyman was trying to play some mind games to get him out of the match, which also makes sense. Jason, what stood out to you in this one?
Well, I think this is probably the most invigorated I've seen Randy Orton in a very long time. The 18 months he was gone when he came back, and I like the almost the playfulness with the fans. It seems like he has a great appreciation for the business again. He's come back, you know, and he's healthy. And, yeah, I mean, he's getting incredible responses from the crowd. And do I think he's going to pull it off? No, not really. No. But I think that if they were going to do a surprise title change, I think that Orton would be the guy that they would choose.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard people pitch Orton wins. Maybe he doesn't pitch pin Roman, which, you know, there's pros to that, but also big cons to that. And then Cody wins a Rumble, and you have Cody versus Orton at WrestleMania, but then you have Roman against The Rock, and that's how you avoid derailing or delaying Cody finishing his journey. And then you also still can get a Cody-Roman match, but with Roman as a challenger at SummerSlam or WrestleMania or somewhere else, you know, over the next year. I don't think that's going to happen. But I think fans aren't crazy to play that scenario out in their head if they want to create some drama about what happens in that four-way match. I'll put it that way. I mean, I can't rule it out. I just really don't think they're going to do it. But tonight's booking, if you're a fan, they got you more – you know, if you're a fan of Randy Orton, they got you more excited about Randy because he got the better of the bloodline, and because Paul Heyman was nervous, obviously, trying to get Roman out of this match, only wanting it one-on-one. They've created a sense of jeopardy, and there is a – logical way that they might go if you're kind of thinking about the booking scheme. So I think some fans are going to talk themselves into it being more of a possibility than they thought before Rock showed up, certainly, and before this week, tonight's SmackDown, that maybe Randy will win. And part of it is, and this is a requirement, how, as you said, Jason, how enthusiastic Orton seems right now. How, you know, he's just in any, since his return, he just seems like he's loving this job. He understands it's probably not for sure the last really big stint where he's healthy and can be a top guy. You know, age is just going to catch up. He's got a lot of wear and tear, but he's well rested and does seem to appreciate what he has in a way that I don't ever recall seeing. So that adds to the idea if WWE wants to, you know, the idea is convince fans that a title can change hands. That was the whole story with Hulk Hogan's title reign. Every new challenger, the job of the WWF and the bookers and Vince McMahon, Hogan and the challenger and their manager was convinced fans this is the guy who's going to unseat the long-running champ. And so, yeah, I mean, they're doing, I think, as good of a job as they can, especially stacking the deck against Reigns by having Styles and Knight in there. And as I said, going full circle, it creates the scenario, which I am not a fan of, but that Roman's reign could come to an end without getting pinned, which is a very weak way for whoever, you know, whichever of the three beat him, most likely Orton, if anyone. It's a very weak way to become champion. But it does give them that card to play if they wanted to, you know, for Reigns to say, hey, I didn't get pinned. This is terrible, and blame Nick Aldis for it. Jason, back to you for some follow-up or additional thoughts.
You know, I think somebody else that we need to give a lot of credit to is Roman Reigns himself. He plays the role of jerk champion so well, but he plays the role of scared jerk champion even better. You know, with the bloodline having the issues they're having, I love vulnerable Roman Reigns, because that helps me buy into a title change as well, because I think to myself, if he's not going into it with the arrogance that he normally would, could that throw his game off? If he's, you know, constantly has his head on a swivel, I like the path that they are doing with Reigns right now, not being happy that, because, you know, you always think of a fighting champion. Oh, yeah, I'll take on three other guys, no problem. This is a guy that is trying to make every case why he shouldn't have to. He's entitled. He should have the one-on-one. I really like the game they're playing with him.
Great points. I've enjoyed Paul Heyman, reacting to Nick Aldis tonight. And, he's always trying to hold things together, be an advocate for Reigns. But, you know, Nick Aldis is a strong authority figure who's really showing up Heyman in a way that we haven't seen Heyman get showing up. You still have Jimmy being nervous and Heyman being nervous. You have Solo being confident, coming up with his own plan. It's the dynamic with Solo and Reigns continues to be interesting, because Reigns kind of reacting to Solo going, I'll fix it. Is he admiring his initiative? Is he wondering if he's taking more initiative than he should because he's not discussing things with him? That dynamic, there's still an interesting dynamic there that they can play out. Do you think Solo is being prepared and set up for success at a top level? Because it seemed like they were protecting him more for a while than they are now. And, you know, he was about to spike Orton, and Orton gave him an RKO and got a clean win. And some of this stuff, you know, people, quote, won't remember specifically, but it does kind of chip away at the sense of invulnerability that, oh, Solo is the guy who might be the guy to take Roman down if he ever turns on him, or if, if they ever wrestled, that Reigns would be in trouble. So how do you feel about where they are with Solo right now, Jason?
I agree. He was so well protected at first. And then, you know, tonight took the clean pin. Like you said, last week he got put through a table. I mean, it took three guys to do it, but it still happened. At one time, he was just the tank. He was the guy that was, he was unflappable. You couldn't do anything to this guy to derail him. And I would like to see the storyline play out. And this is me being Booker and reading into it. I like the fact of Solo saying, I'll fix it. Maybe what he's going to fix is the fact that the bloodline's falling apart because of Roman Reigns, and Solo's going to be the one to fix it.
Yeah, yeah, it could be more cryptic and with more meaning, and maybe that's what Reigns is selling a little bit as the storyline is playing out. So, yeah, you know, good stuff. I mean, they bookended the show with the contract signing. Heyman saying Reigns wasn't going to sign the contract. He wanted a one-on-one match. Aldis saying we don't need Roman, and Aldis seemed to agree. Heyman seemed self-satisfied, but then Aldis revealed we'll just make it a three-way instead without Reigns for the vacated title. So Aldis really being as strong of an opposing force with power that we've seen with the Bloodline, certainly more than Adam Pearce. And Adam Pearce played his role great. Nick Aldis is a really great contrast, and so I'm curious ultimately too where Aldis and Reigns and the Heyman dynamic goes. You know, is all this going to be a babyface GM or not? We've seen some mixed indicators. Does he eventually wrestle Roman? But what they're doing to set him up, and, you know, the way Roman dropped the contract and then handed it back to him, they continue to plant seeds there. So there's just a lot of different sort of connecting lines, if you were to create kind of this like flow chart of different feuds and different things going on around Roman, and they hit on all of them, you know, all the main ones surrounding Roman, they hit on them tonight in SmackDown in the segment. So Roman does kind of feel like the center of the universe right now. And Aldis is another key player along with Solo and Orton and everyone else we talked about.
Yeah, Aldis, I usually am not somebody who cares about general managers. They seem more like set pieces. Aldis is the first guy that actually, when I see he's going to be part of a segment, I pop for it. I want to see it. And I love the authoritative role he's taken over what Adam Pearce did, like you were mentioning. Just that this guy is holding everybody accountable. Do I want to see him be a full-on babyface GM? No, I would like to see him be a straight lace across the board, and maybe sometimes he's got to pull for the heels and because they have a point. But I think that what he's done so far is admirable. I think he is playing that role perfectly.
Yeah, it's like a role he was born to play, and he is a physically intimidating force, and WWE fans haven't had that introduced to them. That hasn't been part of his character. They haven't talked much about Aldis being a wrestler. You know, he just sort of dropped in suddenly was. So they can kind of go whatever direction they want with that because they've left pretty much all options on the table. And, you know, I have no knowledge of him having any kind of injury that would prohibit him from wrestling. So, you know, when he's in his prime, he's in his mid-30s. You know, there's nothing stopping him from, that I know of, getting involved in the ring at some point. And this would be quite the way to lead to that. I don't know if he ends up being a GM for a while and then a full-time wrestler, or just as a GM and never wrestles, or as a GM but wrestles now and then, that all those options are out there. But I think if they do pull the trigger on him wrestling Roman, I think fans would be into it. But I don't know at what point that happens, and I'm not sure how they would be steering fans to feel about Aldis at this point, because if Roman is still a heel, you want Aldis to be a strong babyface opponent of him. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. There's so many things happening between now and the possibility of that. So let's go ahead and pause and introduce ourselves. We've got a lot more to talk about regarding tonight's SmackDown. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, January 19th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Podcast, Wade Keller Post Shows, and a variety of VIP exclusive shows like the Wade Keller Hotline, Post Pay-Per-View Roundtables, The Fix with Todd Martin, and Everything with Rich and Wade. All those were VIP exclusive shows that dropped throughout this week, including updates on Seth Rollins, my Wade Keller Hotline earlier this week, detailing that all signs were pointing towards Seth having a substantial knee injury, not something he just walked off that night. Seems to be the case. Fightful, Sean Ross Sapp, I believe, reporting a partial meniscus tear and a torn MCL. And we don't know if it's going to require surgery or not. I've asked around, still waiting to hear back. But Seth's going to, and they announced on SmackDown, other news where they had him, that he'll be addressing the status of his title reign on Raw on Monday. And that's why I kind of figured they weren't releasing any information, and that's part of why I felt this probably wasn't great news. Now, whether he's going to miss WrestleMania or not, I don't know. One wrestler kind of marched through, like, with me, the different possibilities in terms of how severe the injury is, and if he doesn't need surgery, that there's enough time. If his knee is considered not requiring surgery, the timeline for him to then come back does put WrestleMania in play. So I assume I'll hear more, or WWE will reveal more on Raw on Monday. So that's another newsworthy item on tonight's show. So we have a lot to talk about, a lot more from tonight's SmackDown, although we certainly hit the major, major items with the Bloodline and Roman's challengers. But we welcome you to join us in that discussion. The other voice you hear on the show so far is Jason Goodspeed. He's a contributor to pwtorch.com. He contributes hits and misses columns on NXT and SmackDown. Jason, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thank you so much for the invite. It's a third time back. I really enjoy doing this with you. So when I got your invitation, I was happy to jump on board. I really enjoy doing this with you.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out that you'd be on this week, and it's good to have you back. We'd like to hear from our listeners who are live streaming the show at WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can find a link to the live stream for our post shows after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights by going to our website, pwtorch.com, and clicking on my TV coverage. I do written reports on those shows just about every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday night. And at the top and bottom is a link to the live stream that we start about 5 minutes after the show goes off the air. You can also call in and listen. And if you call in and listen, you can also Raise your hand to participate. The phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. All right, so let's start with calls here. And we'll go to Joe in New York first. Joe, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about tonight's SmackDown?
Yeah, how you doing, Wade? Tonight's SmackDown, it was good. Not great. I would expect a little better since we're only 8 days from Royal Rumble. But, you know, it wasn't bad. But let's look at a couple of things here. Roman Reigns, I mean, good work. But I would have liked him a little more on the show. I mean, for a guy who's only going to show up 7 times a year, let's get something out of him. Let's use him a little bit. I mean, they did a little bit. I would have liked to see a little more backstage in the middle of the show with him. But let's go back to the matches. The one thing that made no sense to me in the booking tonight was why would AJ Styles first I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the name. Who did he fight?
LA Knight?
Who did he fight tonight? LA Knight, thank you.
LA Knight?
Yes.
Yep.
Why would they
no problem.
Fight tonight? Why would thank you? Why would they fight tonight when they're going to fight for the title in eight days? Just hold off. You know what I'm saying? I know it's scripted, but I'm saying it's like that's bad booking because that makes no sense. There's no reason those two guys would fight each other 8 days before they could fight for the title. That's terrible booking.
So
and
well, but I'll pause you for a sec, Joe, because I mean they've got I say this a lot. They've got 104 shows. Prime time that they're paid a lot of money for every year. 52 Raws, 52 SmackDowns, a couple best does, I guess, in there. And they need matches that people feel is worth sticking around to watch. And they didn't wrestle very long. They wrestled 5 minutes, but by having them wrestle each other, they're getting across the idea that they are in it for themselves. They're not all teaming up against Roman. And I think booking-wise, that's important to establish so that fans don't think Roman it has the odds unfairly stacked against him. So if you establish Knight and Styles are not on the same page and that Orton is just laughing at them as they fight, you're now taking away some of the sense that Reigns is being treated unfairly in this four-way match. And then it also had a storyline purpose. It was solo attacking Styles and Knight before a finish. It wasn't a cop-out finish, an escape hatch because they booked a match and they didn't know a finish. That match was booked with the idea being Solo was going to follow up on saying, I've got this. I'm going to fix things. And then they pivoted right from there into the Orton match. So I thought it worked. I don't think LA Knight versus AJ Styles is a match that you like need to save. And by giving it away here, you're taking away this real money match later. And since it was so short, if they do want to go that route someday and build it up more with more hype, I don't think Wrestling Tonight takes anything away from a rematch. Jason, what do you think?
I think it played into this is booking 101 for these multi-man matches, is you always try to sow dissension within the ranks, giving the champion the benefit. So I think it did fit into the storyline of, oh, okay, well, look, it's not going to be three guys against Roman Reigns, like you mentioned. It's going to be every man for himself, but these guys are probably going to be too busy focused on themselves, which is going to give this guy a little bit of an edge. So I understand, and it was not a marathon match tonight. It was, I think it was thrown in there just to be like, okay, here's these two guys. How are they going to be able to be in the same ring for a championship with Randy Orton and Roman Reigns?
Let me throw back to Joe. You can follow up on that or go on to the next topic, Joe, either way.
Yes, I just want to say I do think Solo did a good job, and Roman did an excellent job. When Solo said he was going to fix it, I liked the way Roman, his eyes, he was rolling around like, how's this guy going to fix this? You know, like you could see it going through his brain like that, he was interested. You know, I thought that was a real good job. But, you know, let me switch over to the women for a second. What's happened to Bayley? I mean, ever since she came back from her injury, she just feels so non-important. And I don't know, even her matches, it's like she can't get out of first gear. Just, I don't know, she's just, ever since she hurt herself after coming back from the pandemic, it's just been downhill for her. What do you think?
Jason, what do you think?
Actually, I would say that the I agree, with the exception of last week, her match against Bianca, I liked far more than I had any right to. I'd seen these two women go at it many times, and they seemed to pull out some new wrinkles, and I thought they put on a good match. But, yeah, I think she – I know they're trying to tell a story with her, but, yeah, there are times when I think she does come across as listless, and I think that she has – gotten to the end of where her heel run is. And I think that you're going to see a transition, I would think, to a babyface role for, because she's done everything she could as a heel. But I think that that damage control started off hot. It went kind of south, and then they've added some new members. I wouldn't be surprised to see her ostracized from the group. And who knows, that may be the shot in the arm that will reinvigorate her, and maybe we'll get her out of first gear.
All right, Joe. Yeah, I'm nodding along to that. Do you have any follow-up or any other topic?
No, that's it for tonight. Thank you.
Cool. Great. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Joe. Enjoy your weekend.
Take care.
Yep. All right, our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 if you want to be part of the conversation. We'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee next. Sean, welcome. It's been a while. Here's your jingle.
Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Talking to Sean. Talking to Sean in Tennessee.
So catchy. So nostalgic now. It's been a while. Sean, fun to play your jingle. How's your day going? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Wade. It's going well. It's been freezing cold still here. We still cannot get out of the 20s and like single digits at night. I can't wait for this cold weather to be gone. Wade, I know it's for you for a while, but I can't stand cold weather. I moved away from it for a reason. I do not like it. I can't wait for it to go away. We got 60s next week. It's going to be great. I'm excited. No, Wade, again, you always throw me off with that. Jason, I don't know if I've ever gotten to speak to you yet. I know I emailed one show because I think when the switchboard was messed up, I think you were going to be on and then the switchboard messed up. Have I talked to you on the air yet before?
I don't think we've had the pleasure to speak. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to talk
you. Know, Jason,
man.
You had a chance to pull on Sean. Jason, you had a chance to pull on Sean what Kevin Owens did to Logan and go, ah, I've done so many podcasts, I can't remember who I've talked to.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm a superstar, yeah.
Yes. Anyway, go ahead, John.
No, I just want to say, Jason, it's a pleasure getting you to be on here and contributing to the Torch, man. The Torch family is awesome, and I'm glad you're a part of it. Going back to what Joe initially brought up, I had the same thought that he did. And, Wade, I appreciate you kind of talking through it, because brought some of those points up. I'm more with you. I thought from their perspective, you know, that's what I thought from their point of view. Like, why would they want to have the match then, knowing that people are, you know, Solo's going to probably try to take them out or something like that. That's kind of where I thought of it as. But then it's like it fit into what they were trying to do in the end of the show, which was very good. I thought everybody played their role really well. But I'm glad you brought up, Wade. I wanted to talk more through it with you, I guess, with Solo, because I'm glad you brought that up, because I do think he has lost clean too much. I think there's still something there with him. Like, he still has something going for him. He still has that a good aura about him and still a toughness and a fighting, you know, the power that he has. But I still wonder if it is too much. Like, do you think they're still going to be on a good trajectory, or do you honestly think he has lost too much? I know it was out of nowhere. Randy got the RKO, and it's kind of just random out of nowhere, but it still was clean, and I still think that does hurt a little bit.
Jason, what do you think?
I agree. Like we mentioned earlier in the show, he was positioned as such a monster and this unstoppable force, you see distraction finishes all the time. And I thought, if there's going to be a distraction finish that will be there to protect a wrestler, it should be for Solo. A distraction finish tonight with so many players around, like they couldn't have worked in something that would allow him to take the loss, but be able to look back and say, well, he only took a loss because of this. I know he's up against one of the best in Randy Orton, and beyond the mystique is that the RKO can come out of nowhere. But I really think that in this case, I would have supported a distraction finish and have something that wouldn't have been such a clean victory over Solo.
Yeah, like, I don't – I'm curious. If Solo's going to turn babyface, losing now probably won't matter if he's going to face Roman as a face. If he's going to face him as a heel, they are defining him down during this process. But I also don't want to be an advocate for not doing clean jobs because I'm an advocate for brave booking. Hey, great, you know, there's teams are going to play in the Super Bowl in a few weeks, and they are not undefeated. They will have lost. If it's the Packers in the Super Bowl, they'll have lost a lot in the regular season, but they came on strong because their quarterback got better, their team got better, their coach got better. I can live with Solo doing jobs now and applaud the fact that they're putting over Randy at a time when Randy needs to be put over, and then have Solo get better and tougher when he's not distracted by trying to clean up messes in the bloodline or try to placate or kiss up to or impress Roman Reigns. I think you can tell a story, Sean, where Solo still comes back strong. I'm not an advocate for, you know, a Goldberg undefeated streak for everybody who you want to be a badass, you know, 6 months or 18 months or 24 months from now. I think that can get pretty old. You know, we've seen it. Heck, who is the redheaded guy in TNA that they did with a decade ago? I'm drawing a blank on his name. You know, Joe's had winning streaks. Wardlow's had his winning streak. Hook had a winning streak. Like, yeah, it's a go-to technique or tactic to get someone over, but it can get kind of boring and it limits you. So I'm okay with it, you know, but it doesn't mean that I don't just kind of raise an eyebrow a little bit, go, are they doing it too much? You know, is it a sign of a lack of confidence in him or a sign that they're not going to actually trigger that anytime soon? And I just don't know the answer to it, but yeah, I mean, it's noteworthy for him to when he loses clean, and eventually it won't be. It'll be half expected, and we're sort of getting there. Sean, back to you.
No, I agree. And I think it is brave booking, too, because I think you do want to put – which, again, I would have still had Randy and Roman myself. Like, I still want the one-on-one match. I would still have gone that route. And knowing Randy went over strong, that's just the first thing I thought of. I'm like, well, it'd just be nice to have Randy go over strong and have him against Roman one-on-one. But if you're going to do a four-way, they've set it up the best way they can, or in storyline. Everybody's got it. They all have their issues with them. They're all battling within each other. Like, I think they told it well. I just would have rather done one-on-one. But switching topics, I wanted to bring up, and Wade, I will say, I messaged Todd right as Pete Dunne was introduced. I messaged him. I said, Todd, you don't have to say Butch anymore. You don't have to think of the name Butch anymore. It's gone forever. It's all done. And so I did like that. I'm really excited about Tyler and Pete as a tag team. I really am. And I was torn because I was watching the match, and at first I thought, you know, why are they running the match back? But then, of course, Pete Dunne his name back, and it's like, okay, this makes sense. You know, they got to beat Pretty Deadly now. They have to, because you've built this up to change his name. They got this cool story with them. But I do like Pretty Deadly, and I think they'll be okay because I think WWE is going to put them in that kind of that role, that fun role that they're in right now, which is, you know, kind of where they could be, but which it might be all right. But I wanted to hear what you guys think about Tyler and Pete as a tag team, and do you think they can really build them up as a powerful championship tag team? Because I think they're fun to watch in the ring. They're fun together. They've got the backstory with each other. They got the friendship with each other. So where do you think they're going with that, and what did you think of tonight, what they did with them?
I was just deeply disappointed they changed Butch's name back to Pete Dunne instead of Sparky McGee. I was really hoping for a different name for Butch that would drive Todd Martin completely bonkers. There's still hope for Sparky McGee as a name of a different wrestler. I'm relinquishing all rights to it. Yeah, I mean, they're a good team. They're going to give you good matches. And they, you know, yeah, I mean, they're good. I mean, I'm for them being a team and getting a push. And obviously Pete Dunne, just the symbolism of him dropping the name Butch is sort of cleansing SmackDown, cleansing him of a gimmick that Vince McMahon gave him that was decried in many circles, to say the least. And it says, you know, he's going to be a little bit more serious. So yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, I don't think can they be like WWE's FTR, you know, just kind of the great tag team that just is a no nonsense. Well, you know, they have a little more distinct personalities than Dax and Cash do in terms of how they're kind of acting in their characters, but still, you know, undersized tag team specialists who are largely no nonsense when the bell rings and are really credible in terms of the moves they execute. I'm happy to watch their matches for years to come if they settle in. Jason, how do you feel?
Okay, so very rarely do I ever pop for something that's on television. When they showed Pete Dunne's name, I popped. And last week in the hits and misses column I did, when they talked about, you know, you got to find out who you are, I kept saying, please bring back Pete Dunne. And came back and he had the outfit on he wore in NXT UK. He had that fur coat on. And I was so happy because his mannerisms went back to being Pete Dunne's. And Tyler Bate is just an underappreciated treasure. And I could definitely see these guys be, what Mustache Mountain was for so long. Guys that weren't necessarily well-known, but they were a cohesive unit. And the last thing I'll say is, I'm sorry, but Pretty Deadly, I cannot love these guys anymore. And if they lose all the time, they're comedic gold. And anytime they're on there, it doesn't matter what they do, they never fail to make me laugh. So that whole segment was just a win-win-win-win for me.
Very good. Sean, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I'm with you, Jason. That was great. I love that. The last thing I'll just bring up was I just wanted you to kind of talk a little bit more about the Logan and KO segment. I thought it was just really good. I thought they did a great job. Logan, you just want to hate him. You just want to punch him in the face again. I've said that a lot, but I'll continue to say it because he is what he is, and it's great. And KO just, you know, built up that he's going to come back and doesn't need his brace to beat him, and he's going to beat him. So what did you think of the segment, and who do you think is going to win at the Royal Rumble? And that's all I had, Wade, man. Like I said, I appreciate you. Jason, it's good to talk to you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean. Jason, I've talked a lot about it in recent days, recent weeks, especially this week. The Rumble scenarios are there's plenty of them, and fans can kind of pick their own adventure in terms of where they think things might go. On the VIP show, Everything with Rich and Wade, we hit on some outside the box, less mainstream ideas and played them out. I think there's, you know, a very few who are top contenders, but a lot of intramatch story, little intermatch storylines that they kind of set up too, even for people who don't win. But give me your thoughts on the hype and the array of options and how you think it's going to go.
What he was talking about, you just want to punch Logan Paul in the face. And when they first brought him in and they tried to push him as a baby face, I thought this is a epic fail right from the start because the guy is so unlikable, and that's the image he produces. That he is, so he's great at being a D-bag, basically. I will say that I would love to see Logan Paul retain the championship, because I think a little bit of an extended run will take some of the, as Kevin Owens said, the joke out of it. And Kevin Owens will lose absolutely nothing if he gets pinned clean to Logan Paul, because, you know, Kevin Owens is like Teflon. He's going to just continue to go on his path. But I think Logan Paul, if he's going to drop the title, I'd like to see it like one of the nights of WrestleMania. Even though the Royal Rumble is one of the big four, I'd like to see him hold on to it just a little bit longer. I don't know who a viable contender would be as we move along the line, but there's a lot of great mid-card guys on SmackDown right now that I don't think it'd be a struggle for them to find somebody. But I would pull for Logan Paul at the Royal Rumble, and I could be way off, but that's my take on it.
Yeah, I think Logan Paul should win. I don't think Kevin Owens has been protected enough where losing to Logan is like some sort of demotion, and Logan is just really, really good. But I am enjoying their verbal sparring, and I thought tonight's segment was very entertaining. I thought they both got in good jabs at one another, but the jabs that Logan got in are because he's a big celebrity who has made a lot of money doing things outside of WWE. KO called him on having the you know, sort of red carpet laid out for him to get every perk of becoming a WWE superstar quickly. But of course you can't take away from him, even if he was given all those opportunities. A lot of other people have over the decades been given opportunities, especially with WWE's modern training system, who have flopped, who haven't delivered. And Logan has. So I think KO is a good top utility guy right now, but you don't want to define Logan's upside at Kevin Owens' current level. I think you want to, I mean, it's weird saying it. You know, I mean, it feels weird saying it, but I think Logan is someone who should beat Kevin Owens, keep the title, and bring on the next challenger. If WWE's happy with his attitude and his schedule, they certainly should be happy, I think, with his matches and his promos and then all the cross promotion he brings. So this is a good feud, but I mean, people might be mad hearing it if you're a big KO fan or, you know, or kind of, you know, see Logan as some outsider who shouldn't be getting this much of a push this early. And I would be on board with that, except he's delivered every time. So, but if they want to extend the feud longer, I'm fine with that. The back and forth with them tonight, just top notch. Both represented their characters really well. Jason, anything else you want to add on that?
Oh, I think that's part of the reason why Logan Paul is so easy to hate is because he is so damn good at things. And you look at the Stevenson guy in NXT who, you know, he had this wrestling background and his first match was a train wreck. You got this guy and he comes in and like Kevin Owens said tonight, you can't take anything away from, he was given the tools and they've had celebrities in there before, but I say right now, I never thought I'd say anybody would top Bad Bunny, but Logan Paul topped Bad Bunny. But that's not, no shame or shade on Bad Bunny because he did an amazing job. But, you know, they put guys like Lawrence Taylor in there. He did just enough to get by in that match with Bam Bam Bigelow. But Logan Paul is like a sponge, and he picks up on this stuff. And I mean, you just got to give him like mad respect for that.
You picked up or called out some really good examples of celebrities who had good aptitude and had big names. But yeah, nobody's at Logan Paul's level. I mean, Dennis Rodman was surprisingly good. Trying to think who else.
From Malone wasn't.
Right, exactly. Yes, that was awkward. Jay Leno was Jay Leno. I mean, of course. So yeah, I'd have to think about all the celebrities. But from a ranking standpoint, I mean, I think Logan Paul's number one for a guy who came in from the outside and just had this you know, natural athleticism, natural charisma, but an aptitude to look like he's a wrestler, not a celebrity who's trying to play catch up quickly and pretend to be a wrestler. When you watch his matches, you can kind of forget that like this isn't his main vocation. He just has a passion for it and an aptitude for it. We're in a different era. You know, there was a time where it was a house show business and people would kind of resent in a go away heat type of way that Logan, you know, was getting big matches and holding this prestigious title with all this lineage, but he's just good. And in this era with what Logan has built, even if he's had some, you know, immature, you know, boneheaded moments, it's probably softening the edges of some of the bad choices he's made, but there's a lot that he has done to become the success that he has become. And I don't know. I mean, I know when his match is scheduled next on a PLE, I'm looking forward to it. And he just keeps getting better, or at least proving how good he is. All right. Our number 347-215-8558 or email us WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. Chris from New Jersey emailed and said, with SmackDown's opening segment tonight, did they give away how the Fatal 4-Way ends at the Royal Rumble? We all thought Roman and Randy would be a one-on-one match at the Rumble, but with the 4-Way in place, it seems like the final moments of the match may be that singles match. I think AJ Styles and LA Knight will take themselves out of the picture, leaving Randy Orton to take the pin from Roman via spear or two. Therefore, Roman pins Randy clean, AJ and LA Knight story with Roman can conclude, and Roman can shift his focus towards WrestleMania with Cody or The Rock. What do you think? Yeah, so I'll say the reverse psychology of WWE, and I was going to bring it up earlier and didn't. When the babyface, the challenger, gets a lot in on the heel champion, that can sometimes be their last hurrah before they lose. You know, it's building up the challenger so before the heel beats them. I think in this, I think Reigns should beat Orton. From a standpoint of if you want the match, if you want fans to not resent the Fatal 4-Way aspect, and if you don't want to kind of take a cheap way out, LA Knight's already lost, as Styles pointed out. Styles isn't really at a level where you're believing he's going to have a run, you know, a serious run with the Universal title. So having that either of them involved in the finish just sort of comes across as, well, that's why they put them in the match, so Randy didn't have to do the job. But I think you can have Randy do the job and still protect him because there's so much chaos going on, whether it's at ringside or with Knight and Styles. And they've made Randy look so strong and so good going into it that if there is some distractions and chaos going on before Orton gets speared, I think you can come back with Orton against Reigns one-on-one, and Randy can make the case, or Nick Aldis can make the case, or whoever. Yeah, I mean, that four-way wasn't a clean one-on-one situation that Randy craves, and I think they can go back to it even if Roman beats Randy. Jason, what do you think?
If Randy Orton, if he gets pinned clean by Roman Reigns, loses nothing. His popularity is going to be the same. And this is obviously a different situation than it would have been 15 years ago. Can you imagine Randy Orton taking a clean pin and, you know, just being okay with it? I think this guy is so with it now mentally, and he's so appreciative of everything he's been given now. I mean, this is a guy I think would gladly take a clean pin to promote and continue a storyline. So I agree. I think that the foreshadowing of the AJ Styles, LA Knight going at it, you get them doing their thing off somewhere. And like you mentioned, you got Roman and Randy in the ring, and you can still have a distraction. It's still the bloodline. You usually will expect at least seven people to come running out. So any number of things can happen, but I do think that I could see, to your point, Roman getting a clean pin over Randy, albeit with maybe a few distractions, but I think that's a good storytelling segment right there.
Let's look at some of the smaller things that happened on SmackDown here. One, we had vignettes with Lashley and the Profits and Karrion Kross and AOP with Ellering and Scarlett. Jason, tell me what you think about this setup for this feud and Lashley and the Street Profits and the way that they're framing their characters right now opposite of Karrion Kross and company.
I have said before, and I stick with this, Lashley and the Profits should have been full-blown heels. They should have had a heel faction. I get if they had to internally say, well, we got to make these guys faces because we've got this other group coming in. We got to have somebody for them to fight. But this is a kind of a slippery slope because you've got Lashley and the Profits, and then you've got Final Testament. Both of these factions can't start off losing, yet somebody's going to have to. And please don't let it be Karrion Kross. Right now, I think this is the first time that he's been given something that he can sink his teeth into. And I mean, when he was in Impact Wrestling and NXT, I love this guy. They brought him to the main roster, and he just, you know, he floundered. And then they brought him back, and he floundered some more. And every feud he started, he lost. This pairing with AOP, Paul Ellering, and Scar, I love this group. I'm going into it with a cautious mind because I've seen them build up something like this only to have them lose their first big feud. And then how can you take them serious anymore?
Yeah, Kross has a presence to him and a look. And the problem, even in Impact and TNA, is when the bell rang, you know, he wrestled like he was being careful about an injury he had or not wanting to get injured. He wasn't taking bumps. When he did take bumps, they were not flat, traditional flat back bumps. And you know, I was told, and I talked about this wrestler who I consult regularly, just said he's not going to work on the main roster because none of the top guys are going to want to work with him if he can't sell for them. You've got to have more give and take. He can't be just the killer who everyone bumps for, especially because he's not actually that big in the WWE main roster environment. So all those things came to fruition. And his character felt to me, and I was critical of it at times, like he looked like he was working in a haunted house trying to scare little girls with his cartoon facial expressions. He had all the bells and whistles around him and a cool ring entrance, but I just didn't buy him. I think this is the best version of him, and it's the best way to mask his weakness by not having him in singles matches, but having him be sort of the leader AOP. They can do six-man matches, like clearly they're going to do with Lashley and the Profits, but they're not leaning as much on him for the things that he are his weaknesses. And, you know, the job of any promoter and booker is if someone has some real strengths, which Karrion Kross has, feature them, amplify them, but mask the weaknesses. And Karrion Kross has severe weaknesses. He can't be a top guy in the top mix. I mean, he doesn't have the ring acumen for it. And I actually don't think he has the acting chops for it. But there's something there if you put him in the right context, surrounded by enough things going on. There is that X factor that intrigues people, and that has led to him marching his way from Impact NXT and getting chance after chance on the main roster. Clearly, Paul Levesque sees something in him. So it's early in this, but as down as I've been on Kross and going back to his NXT days as a main event prospect, I just didn't think he was. There's something there that people see that I think Levesque has maybe found the right place for him, the right formula for him to succeed. So it's early, but it's something to watch. And I'm glad AOP are getting another chance too. You can see Paul Levesque has his favorites of people he got to know, people who thinks maybe got a bad, didn't get the opportunity that they deserved on the main roster under Vince. And so now he's trying to make good on some of that. And so far, you know, I think his choices are largely good. They don't come across as just, you know, him favoring people he worked with, who, you know, if they don't deserve it. I think he's finding ways to feature the people because he knows them so well in the best light possible. Jason, any follow-up on that?
I agree with all your points. And I think that this will probably be in a lot of people's minds the last chance for Karrion Kross if this final testament does not go over, because I think with anyone else, eventually we just give up on these people because they come back repackaged 3 months later, they lose and they go away, then they come back and they're repackaged again. And I really do think that this is going to be the final chance for Karrion Kross. If it doesn't work out, I wouldn't be surprised if they cut him again. And I say, please give the mic to Paul Ellering once in a while. I love the guys.
Yeah.
The guy went, I mean, he just – Karrion Kross, to your point when you said about the acting chops, Karrion Kross is one of these guys that is fantastic in pre-produced segments where they can – edit out the parts where he may flub or he doesn't do a good job. When it's pre-produced, I think his stuff is incredible. When he's doing live mic work, I've been less than impressed. But I say if you find that he's not going to be able to talk through a segment, you hand that mic to Ellering and he'd be able to save it.
Do you have any thoughts on the six-man tag? Santos Escobar with Angel and Humberto against Carlito with Joaquin and Cruz del Toro, former stablemates of Escobar. I mean, it was like a 9-minute match. What stood out to you there? It felt like the beginning of something, not a blow-off.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this is, and I've mentioned this in my hits and misses columns a couple of times because I feel passionate about it. They need to separate the tag team championships to Raw and SmackDown again. If for no other reason, you look at the incredible amount of tag teams there are, Del Toro and Wild have been putting on some of the best matches I've seen them do in their career. When they were just kind of like puppets for Santos, they were punching bags, basically. And they were almost under Rey Mysterio's NWO. They've gotten this like revitalization, and their stuff has been stellar. And Angel and Humberto are, again, two stellar talents, and then you put in two veterans like Escobar and Carlito. I love the match, and I was never really a fan of, and you can correct me, what was his name, Zema Ion or something like that?
Oh, right, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I didn't really care much for that, and you know, but this Joaquin Wilde, I have been so tremendously impressed by his work in the past couple of months. It really does feel like they've gotten a second lease on a tag team life.
Santos Escobar, what do you think of the journey that they've put him on, and do you think he's in the right spot now? Do you think maybe Andrade shows up and then they elevate him into a singles feud? Where do you want Escobar to go, and where do you think he's best positioned in terms of on the roster? Top guy, something less than that in tag teams like this?
I could see him being a mid-card champion. I could see him being an intercontinental or a U.S. champion. Do I think he's a world champion guy? I think if he was younger, but I think the guy is in, I read somewhere, I think he's in his early 40s, I believe.
Santos Escobar?
Yeah.
Good question. Let me look that up.
And I'll just continue. I mean, he did incredible work with the Lucha Underground, and the guy's still got a lot of steam and a lot of legs, and his matches are fantastic. But I just think that he is in the later part of his career, I would think. So I think he would make a great mid-card champion, or even somebody who could. I like him as a heel. I think he's a much better heel. This is a guy that just exudes heelish behaviors, and he's very well spoken for somebody that speaks two languages. I think that he's somebody that I could see kicking around maybe the U.S. championship.
Yeah, he's 39 going on 40 right around WrestleMania. So, he's not like a 27-year-old long-term project like Austin Theory, but there's still something in that tank for him. But yeah, I'm with you on the assessment of his role. I thought he was actually a good babyface with Rey. I thought he was more convincing in that role than I expected, but he's a better heel. I mean, he looks like someone you can drop into, Breaking Bad as a villain in a show like that, a prestige TV show, and you would buy into it. He just really carries himself in a good way as a faction leader. Another straight topic here, but I don't have a real strong theory, so I'm curious if you do. What are they doing with Gallows, Anderson, and Meechan and AJ Styles? With Gallows saying, hey, we still got your back, and Styles kind of turning and walking away, are they going to end up uniting them? Is Styles going to be saddled with a feud with these guys? I'm not enamored with Gallows and Anderson, and haven't been for quite a while, and I don't sense Vince McMahon was. I think they kind of bogged down AJ, but they're AJ's buddies. He likes them, and it's almost like they're there to just placate AJ, and it's sort of one of the faults of AEW that we critique sometimes is it seems like a lot of wrestlers just want to work programs with their buddies who they hang out with in the locker room instead of what's best in terms of what the fans might want to see or the best mix and matching of talent overall. And this does sort of feel like, why are we still doing this? But I'm open to them pulling me in. What do you think, Jason?
I think their brand is hurt. Gallows and Anderson, I mean, they lost more than they've won to my recollection. And I think, Meechan is, I when she was in NXT and she was just a badass. I mean, she had the fans behind her. They cared about her. And then she came main roster and, of course, had that terrible failing with Retribution. But then they let her go. They brought her back. She's so good, and I don't mind her being saddled with the OC, but I probably use this excuse far too often, but when something becomes stale, you've got to – usually you can fix it with either a face or a heel turn. I wouldn't mind seeing the OC faction just be bad guys. The only thing is, I don't know – I mean, Meechan could pull it off. But I think she could also be a big-time babyface if they got behind her. It's like Gallows and Anderson. They're like, okay, well, we still have you on the roster. So we're going to do another segment this week where you're going to confront AJ Styles and say you have his back, and then he's going to storm away. And then just remember your lines because we'll do them again next week. I know they've come and gone. I think they could have some life. But that's another one, almost like Karrion Kross. They have just burned that bridge so many times. People don't really take these guys seriously anymore.
No, I agree. Anything else you want to say about the what they did with the women tonight? We had some comments earlier about Bayley. She was on commentary for the tag title match. And then we had a bit of an angle afterwards with Asuka and Kairi Sane in the belts. Just any thoughts on what they did there?
I was so upset that I knew that Unholy Union was not going to win the titles. I love Isla Dawn and Alba Fire. I love them. I love them in NXT UK. And I love them in NXT. And when they came to the main roster, I was so excited. And then they had the championships. And then they kind of went away. And then they brought them back. And then the first thing they do is lose. And Chance and Carter, I think they have some creative moves, but nobody has any reason to care about them because they come out and they've got their little guns that shoot smoke, but nobody knows outside, oh, they like to party. The only thing that salvaged that segment tonight is the Kabuki Warriors. Kairi Sane and Asuka, I love this version of them. They're just this almost like a Mean Girls kind of thing. Damage Control right now is about one of the few women's things on SmackDown that's working. And Bianca, but I don't. I just the women are given a lot of time in matches now, and they're being focused on more. And yet, the thing that hurts them is the lack of character development. We need a reason to either love these people or hate them, and not just how they cheat in the ring. But if you just bring out these two random girls, and you're like, okay, here, look at this. It's this tag team, and people sit on their hands. Why you've given us no reason? Give us some vignettes before you debut them on the main roster. Have them do sit down interviews. They got Jeremy Borash. That guy does amazing work. You're telling me he couldn't put together segments for these women that would make them pop? I just wonder why they can come off as an afterthought. And where's Jade Cargill? We haven't seen her since she was first signed, and then all of a sudden she's disappeared from TV. I don't know. Sometimes it makes no sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, there's mixed signals on the Jade situation. And if this was, well, we wanted to get her name out there, but now we know there's work to do. Maybe they didn't know how much work there was to do, or maybe she didn't know how much work there was to do to get to the level she needs to be at. That's still kind of a story in progress. We'll see. But it's also possible they are just having her lay low so she can show up in the Rumble and toss everybody out of the ring, you know, and have a moment. And so a lot of speculation and conjecture and curiosity about her. I think they'll, you know, if she has a baseline aptitude in the ring that WWE's happy with, I still think that she's going to get a big push. But yeah, the women's tag division, you have a tag title match and it goes 3 minutes. You know, it's sort of, to me, I know they just, you know, they have their eye on viewership and trying to distribute time, but it cheapens the matches when there's tie, you know, when someone is deemed a worthy challenger and the division is so shallow that they lose that quickly. But Asuka and Kairi Sane are a really good team. You know, I mean, that they can be the centerpiece of that division, and Chance and Carter, they've done, you know, they put some elbow grease into the vignettes and trying to frame some aspect of their personality. It's tough in the tag division, especially the women's tag division. They just don't have the depth in the roster to have as many teams that they're investing time in and getting fans invested in as would be ideal. But can they do a better job? Yeah. I mean, no question about it. Jason, is there anything else from SmackDown on your mind that you want to comment on?
Oh, I think we've covered everything. I thought it was overall, I thought it was a pretty good show. Once again, a lot of storyline developments, which is something I love, and Pete Dunne's back. So I'm a happy boy.
Tell me, as our final topic here then, what do you think happens in the Royal Rumble match itself? Do you have one solid pick or just, you know, two, or is there a third and a fourth possibility in your mind?
Ben, I'm going to go with a big name, like either a CM Punk or a Cody Rhodes. I was talking with somebody about the women's matchup, and I thought, well, you know, they might go with a Becky Lynch. They might go with a Bianca Belair. For me, I would love to see one of the entrants be Dakota Kai and have her win that whole thing. And I think that would tell a good story with Damage Control of, oh, look, you know, I've been kind of keeping everybody together here, and I won the Royal Rumble, Bailey. What have you done lately? So that's just that's my booking. Like, I won't even call it 101 because it's not even like professional enough. But I think, and I would like to get your thought on something. I love the Royal Rumble, and I love the surprise entrance, and yet at the same time, I don't like them because you automatically know when a Santino Marella comes out, he's not going to win the Royal Rumble. What do you think about, at one point or another, I know this is a going to headline WrestleMania moment, but to have a surprise entrant actually win the thing, otherwise they're just cannon fodder. They come in, they stand for a while, get thrown out, and everybody cheers because it was a novelty factor.
And by surprise, do you mean Cody showing up, Jade Cargo showing up, or you mean a surprise being a legend of the past, somebody who no one was picking to win and wasn't even on the radar, just to invest in people being on edge in future years?
Yeah, which is why I used Santino, because I thought, well,
yeah.
Or you know, if he decides to break out his Santina character, and nobody thought Mickey James was going to win it, even though it was cool to see her out there with like the Knockouts Championship and everything. That was an awesome moment, but they bring in these for people to pop and say, oh, look, it's the return of such and such for one night. And yet there are a lot of guys that are on the active roster and women, and they don't even get an entry into the Royal Rumble. And sometimes, as much as it's my favorite event of the year, that has always been kind of a personal sting for me.
I get that people enjoy the surprises. Oh, I haven't seen him forever. But I think, because the stakes of the Royal Rumble are so high, that there should be some implied qualification you need to have other than being a fun nostalgia pop. And so I have not been a big fan of that. And I'm not sure Paul Levesque is a big fan of that. We're going to start to see signs of that now that he's got full control of the book of WWE right now, of creative control. Yeah, I think it cheapens the match to have people who shouldn't be anywhere near a WrestleMania main event or a world title shot even being in the match. It feels like you're just padding it with, yeah, novelty pops instead of deserving people. That said, I don't feel super strongly about not sort of having an honorary two or three spots out of 30 in the men's and women's match, especially the women's where, you know, there's some women who didn't get good paydays back in the day and have been off TV for a while, and having them come back, I mean, they do get nice pops, and it adds a novelty. I keep saying novelty, but it does. It adds a cool novelty aspect to the match. But I'm still conflicted because I'm such a proponent for structure, logic, wrestlers being thrown into a Rumble match who do not in any way deserve a fluke opportunity to main event WrestleMania. How do you believe that WWE would do that? Like, that they would put, if this is real, and of course, you know, pro wrestling's best when, I would argue, when they do everything they can to make it seem as real as possible, so you just get pulled into it, just same as a good TV, good movie, good play. And so when you have legends who are out of shape or wrestlers who clearly aren't making any kind of full-time comeback, it's a one-off, it does water down and cheapen the whole concept. So I'm torn. I get why they do it. I'd say if you do it, don't overdo it. I don't think I get the point you're making, but it has to be the right surprise return winning. It has to be like a really like the right person if you're going to end up giving them a match at WrestleMania. Now, you could have somebody win unexpectedly, but then get hurt or opt out or something, and it could be this whole like unexpected controversy. What are we going to do? This person won. They can't headline WrestleMania. They're not a worthy opponent. They won on a total fluke. And you could turn that into a storyline, but again, that'd have to be done very carefully because they have this winning formula with the Rumble and WrestleMania, and I just don't know if you want to mess with it too much just for the sake of trying to create a sense of suspense in future years. Jason, your follow-up on what I had to say there, if anything.
I agree 100%. It's almost like they pigeonholed themselves into this, the winner gets a title shot at WrestleMania. If they had maybe gone a different route and said the winner gets a spot in Elimination Chamber, then
right.
You know, because that way you can get a Molly Holly and you can have her win the Royal Rumble, and everyone's like, oh my, what a big surprise that was. You put her in the elimination chamber. She can be one of the first top, you know, one or two that gets eliminated. And then you've kind of been able to have that moment, but yet not ruin what would be. I love Molly Holly, but again, do I think she's a main event WrestleMania girl? No, I don't think so. But I almost like they didn't think that far ahead, and then they started saying, "Well, okay, we're going to put all these people in, but we're going to make it so unbelievable because nobody's going to ever imagine these people are going to win because who in the right mind wants to see this person headline WrestleMania?" So it is. I mean, I still enjoy it, and I will still pop and laugh for certain entrants that come in. But then there's that part of me that I have that underlying nagging. I'm like, you know, it's. I wish they had done this differently, but
it's still a fun event, even when there's things going on that you don't love, or sometimes it feels predictable. There's still so many different chapters and so many different kind of intra-match feuds that occur that keep things interesting for 60 minutes, give or take. And it, you know, as Michael Cole says, it's a lot of people's, including his favorite match of the year, favorite event of the year.
Great.
Very good, Jason. Good talking to you again about SmackDown. Really appreciate you joining me tonight.
Well, thank you, Wade. Anytime you reach out to me, if you ever need a co-host, I love doing these with you. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Great having you on again. Thanks to our callers and the emailer and everybody listening. Keep spreading the word. Search Wade Keller in your podcast app. If you haven't yet, subscribe to both our red logo and blue logo shows. Also search PW Torch to subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast, a different show with a different theme every day of the week. And, of course, check out pwtorch.com, including Jason Goodspeed's Hits and Misses columns. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.